Welcome to the One Right Church podcast, where we will discuss what it's like to believe that you attend the only right church. My name is Mark Shaw, and I spent the first 45 years of my life in the Followers of Christ Church in Oregon City, believing I was in the One Right Church. Our hope is that by simply sharing our story, that we would urge people to look to the Bible for answers instead of their religious traditions. We want to encourage people to trust in Jesus for their salvation and not in attending the One Right Church. Let's get started. Well, hey, Scott.
How are you doing?
Good. Good.
You've been doing some demolition around here lately.
Yeah, tearing the church apart downstairs.
Right, with permission and gratitude, but it's not been good.
Yeah, a little water heater leak can become...
I'm very thankful it's you, not me, that's dealing with it, so thank you. Yeah.
Well, we've got an interview today. We haven't had a guest for quite a while, so...
Nobody's really wanted to talk to us, that's what it is, isn't it? I'm glad you finally talked somebody into it.
We did. We've got... Cole Crone here. We'll let him share his story. Welcome, Cole.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Long time listener, big fan.
Yeah.
You. Wow, no one's ever said that before. That's
there's
cool.
There's a first time for everything.
I've always wanted somebody to say that.
There's a first time for everything.
That's awesome. Yeah. So you and I left Followers around the same time and went through a lot of Bible studies and things together and... was good friends with your parents for many years, still am. So would love to just hear kind of your story, and we'll just go through the process of what it was like to be there, what it was like going through the process of leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of my story will probably sound a lot like Mark's story. I was born and raised in the Followers of Christ Church in Oregon City, and... I would say that I'm from a good pedigree. Mark and I have that in common. I had a pretty good life. My parents were relatively well respected. My families were relatively, we didn't have any, we didn't have anything working against us. And so I had, for all intents and purposes, a relatively decent upbringing.
Okay, I need to know kind of what you're talking about there. That is interesting.
Yeah.
Nothing working against you, like scandals or what does that mean?
Yeah, so I had both of my grandfathers lost their dads when they were relatively young. And a lot of times that causes a young man to go off but they both stayed the course and had really good men come alongside them and ended up being kind of like staples of the community.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Raised good kids who all stayed in the church and chose one in the church to marry.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
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 So I had friends growing up who had a grandparent who had left a dad who was asking too many questions or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. We were just right in the middle. We were.
Yeah.
Perfectly centered, and so I had a lot of friends, and I fit in, and those sorts of things. Because I didn't have any disadvantages, so early on, I thought things were pretty great.
Yeah,
because of that. Yeah, so for my problem was, for as long as I can remember, I have been a dreamer, somebody who thought they wanted to experience something new or be something different or those sorts of things. And when you're in a community where everybody basically looks like the same version of the same kind of thing.
Like which part of construction are you going to go into?
Right.
And what? Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like what neighborhood in Oregon City are you going to buy a house in?
Right.
Which of these 20 girls are you going to marry?
Right.
Those sorts of things. Right. Yeah. And I was kind of always hoping and looking beyond those things. Is there something else? Much like a Disney princess.
You were looking for Disney princess?
Yeah, no, I had the mind of a Disney princess. where I was like looking, beyond, and is this really all that there is, right? As I'm looking around and I'm surveying.
I see.
Is this really it? Is my future going to look just like everybody else's future? And growing up, I just wanted to be Indiana Jones.
Okay. You know, better than a Disney princess. Yeah. I'll give you that.
Right. So yeah, right. Yeah, but like, you know, somebody who seen the world and was like just as comfortable, you know, at a black tie event as he was, you know, teaching an archaeology class at the local college as he is, you know, spelunking for treasures in caves, right?
Right.
Like that was kind of, because I wanted to have some different experiences that weren't really on offer where I came from. And so that presented me with a difficulty because, yeah, you know, obviously, you know, you tell your parents when you're, say, 7 or 8 years old that you want to grow up and go to college, and they're like, well, that's not something that we do. And you're kind of like, why not? You know, now I'm like, my dreams are dashed because this is the thing that I thought I really wanted to do. But of course, you're being raised in a community where nobody has done that. And so it's like, you know, it's really popular nowadays to talk about, but like, if, you know, if you're a young black kid being raised by a single mother in Akron, Ohio, and then LeBron James comes out of nowhere and you're like, you got a kid who's from where you're from. He's being raised in the situation you're being raised in, and he's made it.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have somebody to look up to like that, who had gotten beyond and done something that nobody else had done. And right. So you just knew this was your box.
Yeah. And we were supposed to really, I felt like we were supposed to look up to the people who wanted to stay in the center of that box and who didn't have those aspirations that you had as a kid. That's
right.
Those are the people we were supposed to look up to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so early on, realizing that, I don't think I made a choice I know I didn't make a choice in real time, but looking back on it now, I kind of began to play a role. I sort of began to see my life as playing a part. Like, I was an actor cast in a play to play this role. This was my lot in life. These were my only options. And so,
do you mean like just figure out how to pretend that you're happy and content? And,
yep.
Okay.
This is the only future as far as I know.
Yep.
And so that's what I'm going to aim for. Hmm. And because what else am I going to do?
And you weren't really expecting it to make you happy. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you, of course you wish, right? Of course you're hoping.
Nobody wants to be unhappy, but, but you don't expect it to, because that's not what you wanted to do.
And and I feel like I was always kind of thinking, okay, maybe the next stage is the stage that's going to make, you know, all of this worth it. There's got to be some reason why everybody's doing this.
Right.
And so, that was kind of the playing the role was about, because, you know, when conformity is king, not conforming is like the worst thing that you can do or be.
Yeah.
Right. Is a nonconformist. And so you learn how to conform.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to conform relatively early on, but I think I compartmentalized it as, this is just the role that you're playing. And hopefully someday you enjoy the part.
Yeah.
That was where I went.
Sounds hard. Yeah.
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 So were there some, I mean, this clearly didn't work because you're sitting here now, but was there something major that changed that for you, that made you realize I don't want to play this part anymore?
Yeah. I think so. Yes, there was, but there were steps that I had to be willing to break character. There were things that had to be worth breaking the character, like getting outside of the mold, like going off script.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that had to be, because like I always questioned the hospital thing, you know, like not going to hospitals, and I was
right.
That was always something I thought. There's just no way that this is a legitimate way that like God wants us to live.
Yeah.
You know, so that was always a hard pill for me to swallow for as long as I can remember. And we had family, not in my immediate, like in my household, but in our larger family, we had people who were faced with issues that ended up having to make the decision to take children to the hospital and things like that. So it was something that I thought about from a relatively early age. And you guys have talked about on this podcast before how that's the distinguishing factor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so if that's the cornerstone, if that begins to wiggle,
Yeah.
And you finally figure out, well, I can just take this out. You can make something entirely different.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, that was the first thing that started to wiggle. And I was like, well, then I don't really even know what part of this. So that was growing up. That was when I started asking questions. But the first time, and this is going to sound, and she's going to hate the fact that I'm framing it this way when she listens to this, but the very first thing that made me totally comfortable with the idea of going off script and breaking character was a girl. like for most of us, I imagine, because my wife has an interesting, my now wife, she wasn't obviously then, but...
Your Disney princess.
My Disney princess. Yes, exactly.
She is going to hate
this. Yes, she's going to hate this. Yeah. Yeah. Well, she had an unfortunate family situation because her mom had left, and which is like the worst sin you can commit. And then she married somebody while she was a part of the quote unquote world, and then, you know, wasn't willing to give him up to come back. And so they had kids. And so my wife is one of those kids.
We've talked about it. Cindy has not the same background, but a similar background where her mom continued to live with her dad after he had left Followers.
Right.
So I can relate a little bit, but it's not the same.
Yeah, so there was friction because there were very few guys around who were willing or able to entertain the possibility of dating my wife or her sisters.
Yeah.
And so that was something that was a nonconformist move that I had to make.
Yeah.
And there was no hiding it. Like I could have my own thoughts about the hospital or about, you know, some of the other weird doctrines, right?
Right.
But as long
she's
as
in your car.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah exactly. But like eventually we're going to walk down the aisle in front of everybody. It's going to be difficult to hide.
Right.
So that was a move, but that was the first move that I made that wasn't on the bingo card. From the start.
Yeah.
And so...
So you felt like you were breaking that character to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, because the guy that I was playing was somebody who was never willing to go outside of the box. Like, I could have my own private thoughts, like I said, but I wasn't going to do something that would put me on the outside.
Yeah.
And so that was the first move that I made that I knew a certain type of person was going to disagree with.
Yeah.
But I was fine with it. And so, obviously, I made that move. But that move led to a series of moves. So after we got married, I didn't experience a ton of friction. I had friends, obviously, who were like, this probably isn't a good idea, but it seems like you're going to do it anyway.
Right.
And I didn't lose any friends or family members, or of course they might have not have agreed with my choice, but I didn't lose anybody.
Okay.
Then when we went to have our first child, like 2.5 years later, we had some complications. And we were trying to do things the way that we do things at Followers.
Yeah.
Non-hospital, no
home
medication,
births.
Home births, that type of thing. And it wasn't going good at all.
Yeah.
And after like 5 days of, you know, labor pains and sleepless nights and work, right? Because that was how we did things. You work the whole time.
Yeah.
You have pains, you're working.
Yeah.
But there was no dilation taking place. There was no real advancement going on in the birthing process. And so, I basically had to make a decision. And the way that my family was, you made that call on your own. That my dad, for all the things he beats himself up about, the one gift that he gave me was forcing me to make my own decisions. I had to make the decision. I was the one who had to live with it and reconcile it to my creator eventually. And so I made a choice that I was willing to reconcile with God, basically.
Yeah.
And so we went to the hospital. Our oldest was born, according to the professionals, who I trust, I didn't at the time, but who I do now, said that we were just in the nick of time. I mean, it was emergency C-section. It was bad. He needed an extended stay before we could take him home. There were lots of things. So that was the second move. that I was willing to make that wasn't in keeping with the role that I had decided that I was going to play. Now, the next move is a little bit different. So the hospital thing was always an issue for me, and now I had made the decision that I wasn't going to, in an emergency situation, I was willing to go.
Right.
Now, when we went to have our second child and the frightful phrase, "it's a girl," was ringing in my ears, my first thought was, I don't think I'm going to be able to stay here. Hmm. Because just 2 years prior, I had made the decision that I thought was the right decision, and that was to save my wife and my unborn child. Well, now I have a daughter,
yeah,
who could one day grow up and marry one of these, you know, knuckleheads like I was, who might not make the right decision.
And in your experience, people didn't speak into that. This guy who marries your daughter would be on his own to make this decision.
Yeah, and
or his family might speak into it, and then you're set up that the other way too.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and I just knew right away this is a complication that was going to be almost insurmountable because I thought to myself, are you really the kind of person who's going to be able to sit and let somebody else determine this situation?
Yeah. A life or death.
A life or death on behalf of your child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And I just was like, and I remember going, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That'll never.
That's like several chess moves ahead.
Yeah.
You know, down the board. That's really something. Yeah.
I mean, and nobody knew better than me at the time anyways, like how difficult, well, there was people who knew obviously, but I mean, like there were a few of us.
Yeah.
Who really knew how difficult the situation was. And a lot of guys who did know how difficult the situation was didn't make the same decision that I'd made and lost their wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
And or the child.
Yeah.
That happened. Yeah. Like
or both.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I mean, we knew that was a thing.
Hmm.
Yeah. And so that was the beginning of the end. That piece right there. Because asking questions is one thing. Making a few choices that you think people might not like is another thing. This was something that I didn't think I was going to be able to live with.
So let me just ask, if you had all boys.
That's a good question.
You might still be there?
Wow, that's a good question.
I assume there are some other things, but...
Yeah.
But... I like that you were able to identify the one thing, but then that does make me wonder.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm thinking about this. That's actually a really good question. I wonder. Letitia and I'll have to talk about that because I wonder. Because, it was tough because that was the point where I realized there were going to be things that were – I'm from a male-dominant family. I mean, my dad's one of four boys. They all had boys. Even on my mom's side, which is my mom's one of three girls, but they all had boys.
Yeah.
I mean, I have one female cousin on one side and one female cousin on the other side. It's like the rest of them are boys.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I never planned on raising girls. That was not on my bingo card. So I was like, okay, this is something I'm going to have to really readjust my whole plan.
Yeah.
Because this is different.
Did you talk to your wife about what you were thinking at that time?
No.
Okay.
No, I labeled them intrusive thoughts that I had to keep up here.
Yeah, yeah. And then how old was your daughter when you actually ended up leaving? I'm just curious the time span.
Oh, boy. She was born in 2013, and we were there until 2019.
So you knew for 6 years, basically, that staying was not your long-term plan.
I thought unless something really changed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So when that happened, it was only about, and then the Lord's providence, it was from February to July. So in July of 2013, that was the first time, at least that I can recall, the first time I heard the gospel.
Okay.
Yeah. I was sent a YouTube video that was a reading of one of Spurgeon's old sermons.
Okay.
And it was titled Salvation by Works, a Criminal Doctrine. And it was like long.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I was at work and we were having downtime. And so I like popped my headphones in and I'm like, yeah, sure, I got time to listen to this. And it was like an hour or something long. And he was talking about like the fact that we're saved by grace. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
That can't be right.
Yeah.
Because I'd never heard that before.
Right.
And so that moment came at a time when I was really questioning mm-hmm. if I could make it work here long term. And then here I have this whole new theological framework come crashing into my life. And that started a snowball effect that it lasted 6 years, but eventually the rolling, the snowball got so big as it rolled down the hill that it.
Yeah. Was it someone at Followers that shared that with you in 2013?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I didn't even know anything like that existed until 2016 or something.
So, right.
Yeah. That's interesting. I mean, I know Charles Spurgeon is around for a long, long time, but
That was when I started. That was when I started looking at external sources.
Okay.
So I had never really explored Christianity outside of Followers until then.
So what is it like to live with that pressure for 6 years, or that tension, or that knowing that you're going to have? I mean, what was that like?
Yeah, it's tough because, well, I think part of it was that I had all of this time of forcing myself to fit into what I thought I was supposed to be. And so I got really good at that. But yes, it was like a rock. I describe it like if you have a rock in your shoe, but you just need to take your shoe off and get rid of the rock, but it like you don't, and so you keep walking on it.
Right.
And the irritation just gets more and more and more,
yeah.
In a good way, obviously, but that was what this was, and it was a slow build, but I certainly knew that I was living in tension. Mm-hmm. But like many, I hoped that things would get better. I'd hoped that Followers would become what I thought was a regular church again.
Yeah.
Like many people. I was holding out for things to change.
And, but a preacher would come, right?
We would get leadership and ministry, and we would be able to do the things, you know, we would go back to a Bible, like a church that looks like, a Book of Acts kind of church.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I have to ask about that, because when you said, I was hoping we'd become like a regular church, I was not thinking we get a preacher or called man go back to the way that it was supposed to be at Followers. I thought you were thinking it's going to be more like other churches. Which one was
it? I think there were times when I would have been happy with either or. Just anything but that, anything that was different
was
than what it was.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. A church that, you know, preached the gospel, administered the sacraments, these sorts of things that I was reading about in the Bible.
Yeah, and not only that, that would be the outworking of it, but just something, there was just such an emptiness that you would feel going to a church called Followers of Christ Church, never talking about Jesus, ever.
Yeah.
Like, never. And the Bible isn't even read from anywhere. Just singing hymns our whole lives.
Yeah.
So it's a called man, like that was the solution that we were presented with our whole life. So we're just waiting on God to send the right man. And so,
I always longed for that moment because I thought this person would fix everything.
Right.
And then we would just go back to normal.
Yeah.
And then they can decide if I had made a bunch of mistakes and they could yell at me if they wanted to about the things.
Yeah.
You know, but I wasn't willing to pay the price to leave at that time, right?
Yeah.
And so the next level of tension that got turned up, and I think it was the final piece of tension that would eventually unravel the whole thing, was when our oldest was diagnosed with autism. Mm. This would have been the early 2015. So yeah. I'm wrestling with the theological angst of having heard this message that I can't unhear for that amount of time. And then again, in a community where conformity is king and you have a child who's non-conforming by nature.
Yeah.
Right. That is what autism is, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so it was like, well, he's not going to be able to have the life that,
yeah.
And I had protected my kids to some extent because I wasn't exactly sure if I could commit myself to this community,
mm-hmm.
even though I wasn't willing to pay the price to leave.
Yeah.
I was living in this, like, you know, no man's land.
You were on an island, basically.
Right. Yeah. I was in that. Yeah. I was in that place. Like, you know, I wasn't in the English army, but I wasn't in the German army either. Right. I was kind of in between and I felt like I didn't belong in either.
Yeah. We've talked about it on here before. Mm. Like, you've got one foot on the dock, one foot in the boat, and the boat is leaving the dock and you've got to make a decision.
There's only so long you can stay in that place.
Yeah.
And so I think the two reasons that I stayed, one was this, right? Like we talked about, somebody's going to come eventually. Like,
yeah.
God's not going to leave us hanging forever. Eventually, right. We'll get somebody who can, you know, take over the ship and guide it in the right direction.
Yeah.
So there was always that hope. And then the price of losing family, losing friends.
Yeah.
And not knowing where I would go.
Yeah.
Like, where am I going to go if I leave the only community that I've ever known? Then what?
Plus, you're trained your whole life that everything outside of the walls is trying to deceive you.
Right.
It is out there to pull you away from this place.
Right.
So you're just kind of have this ingrained doubt about that you will be able to find a safe place if you do leave.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an invisible fence for dogs.
Right.
Where you go so far and then, you know, you're expecting this shock and so you turn around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So I had those two complications that were weighing on me, and I genuinely thought that the community could be reformed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that hope kept me there because I felt like eventually God would see how lost we were and provide the shepherd that I thought we all agreed we needed.
Right.
So that was basically where I sat until other people started getting off the ark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for a long time, we were all sealed in there, right? And we were just weathering the flood, right, in the safety of the ark. I know you guys have talked about the ark of safety motif on this podcast before.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're all in there. And every once in a while, one or two crazies would jump out.
Yeah.
Right. But it was never that many people.
Right. People would immediately discredit them.
Right.
And make sure, you know, and don't talk to them.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah.
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 Yeah. It was when like handfuls and handfuls of people were starting to go like, I'll take the floodwaters.
Yeah.
Over another minute on this arc.
Yeah.
When I started going, okay, maybe there is... Maybe there is a way to safely get off and to weather the storms of life on another boat.
Yeah.
And so I think I needed more people in the community to pave that way for me to feel like I could also.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was from like 2017 to 2019, there was like this mass exodus. And we were kind of part of the second wave of that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's interesting that just as you were saying, and I've said very similar things, that you had hopes that God would see how lost we were,
right,
and send a man to save us.
Right.
I was just like, he did. Like, that is the story of the Bible.
Yeah.
God seeing how lost we were
uh-huh.
and sent someone to save us.
That's exactly right.
yeah, we just had tunnel vision about that, and we had Anyway,
well, when you think about that, just how rich is it that that is in the human heart?
Yeah, yeah.
That we are when you recognize you're lost, you are looking for someone to save you. Yeah. And you might look in the wrong place, but that is exactly the human condition and exactly what God has come to do. And so I think that's quite remarkable that you both articulate really the entire storyline of the Bible in your own experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that once the Holy Spirit entered the picture and I saw Jesus fully for who he is and for what he did. I mean, you can understand those things on an intellectual level, but the thing that gives you enough certainty to be willing to risk everything for it is that, like we talked about, the 18 inches between your brain and your heart.
Yeah.
And that once that moves, then it was kind of like there really didn't really matter what was behind me.
Yeah, I've talked about it on here before, but I spent a lot of years praying that God would reveal to me what is true and then give me the strength to act on that.
Yeah.
And until he revealed to me what was true, then I stopped praying because it was too hard. Like what the cost was going to be was too hard. And my first response to it was to quit praying that because I didn't think I could do it, because you just know what will happen.
I think it's worth noting from my vantage point that in some respect your emotional responses were two very different responses. Yours, you just described yours as you quit praying and you didn't want it to be true.
Yeah.
And you said, I just was ready to forget everything behind. And that's kind of, when you said that, that's kind of my earliest memory of you and hearing your story was you just like, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And you were ready to move on when I first met you.
Yes.
And it impacted you, Mark, differently.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that I stayed at Followers for probably about 3 years after becoming a believer. Like, I don't know exactly, but I knew better 3 years before I was able to leave, or we were able to leave. And but the Lord had to answer that prayer to give us the strength to
respond.
The one I quit. I started praying it again.
Sure.
But for a while, I thought, oh man,
I'm sure he left it on his phone, and he would just listen to that old prayer over and over.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So then once we left, I think there was a bunch of changes that took place that reinforced, to me at least, because you make a decision like that to leave everything that you've ever known behind. And a lot of times you have that boldness because you have that supernatural thing going for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's giving you that assurance and pushing you forward and helping to like guide you and make sure you know that you're going the right direction. Mm. And that's not as consistent, obviously, right? As we would hope that it would be a lot of times. And so
you mean it comes and goes?
Yeah. Like there were, you know, I still have moments, you know, where I think even if it's just for a split second, like, man, I really hope this was worth it.
Mm.
And then of course, you know, the Lord comes along and goes, yes.
Yeah.
Come on, kid. You know it. You're on the right track.
Yeah.
And I think it's the peaks that I have been brought through over the years that have helped to reinforce that, as well as getting out of the valleys.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking about, I've said on here before that I believe I can honestly say that I have never once regretted the decision to leave. There have been super hard days, like every birthday, every Father's Day, you know, things like that are hard. But the Lord pulls you through.
Yep.
And I can remember when there were hard days there, the answer was muster up some strength, right. Toughen up, try harder, quit asking questions.
Yeah, exactly. It's
just so much better to go through those valleys with the Lord than it was without, for sure. That's probably the most obvious thing anybody's ever said on this podcast, but...
Well, it's an important thing.
Yeah.
Because really, you're going to, that's the choice you're making.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm going to have an easy life or a hard life. Nobody gets the easy life.
Yeah.
You're going to have to say, okay, am I going to go with the Lord or am I going to go on my own?
Yeah.
And that's really the choice.
Yeah.
Am I going to try harder or am I going to trust Him?
Yeah.
And so that's the difference.
And one of the things you said about you needed people to pave the way a little bit. I wonder if I've talked about that enough on here, the importance of that and the people who did do the hard thing. And I was able to sit back there and watch to see how it turned out for them. It's kind of cowardly, but I have a deep appreciation for the people who did that. It's very important. And I had a lot of friends who kind of held my hand along the way and gave me good advice. And,
oh, sure.
Because I came up with every excuse in the book to stay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And once we were out, and like you said, I had learned to do this life thing in community.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I have these ideas, these things that I would like to do. I feel like the Lord might be leading me. Before, when I felt like the Lord was leading me, I had to be like, no, that can't be it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go that direction. But once I had been freed from that and brought into a community that actually did want me to walk with the Lord, I thought, well, I'm going to start thinking about what I might do next.
Yeah.
Now, what's step one in this new freedom path. And for me, one of the things that I always wanted to do was earn a college degree. Nobody in my family had ever done that.
Yeah.
You'd be hard pressed to find a high school diploma in my lineage, let alone a college education. And so I thought maybe this is something I can do. And I got great counsel from Scott and others.
Mm-hmm.
And we left in 2019, the fall of 2019, and I enrolled for my undergrad studies in the fall of 2020.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome experience. That was, I felt like, oh, this is like being a student thing. This is part of my makeup. This is definitely something that the Lord...
You were wired for that.
Yeah, the Lord wired me this way. He made me to be this way. And when there wasn't, when I had to do all my own, you know, independent learning before, so to get something formal was really cool. And then the next big change, after long times, I think our youngest was born in 2013. We had, in 2021, I was about to wrap, well, no, I was about halfway through my undergrad studies. And we find out we're pregnant.
Okay.
And we're like, we have an, I think we had like a, what was it? They were like 8 and 10.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, okay. We thought that part of our life was over. We'd had some issues. So we had baby number 3. And it was like, he was born, I was writing like my capstone project, like in the hospital, waiting for him to be born. So like finishing my undergrad studies and him being born like basically happened in tandem, because I didn't want to be doing that stuff. You know, I did my undergrad studies online, so it was self-paced, and so I could do it my own. But I didn't want to be doing that, so I really truncated my time and
you pasted so it would coincide with
So I was like
the birth.
Yes, and then he was a little bit early, and so I was like, oh boy. So I had to wrap my that up. So another. And then I think when I set out to do my undergrad studies, one of the things I had in the back of my mind, which was an odd thought, was what about like theological training?
Yeah.
What about ministry? These weren't things that we entertained growing up.
No.
That wasn't, when, like, to presume that you could do something like teach the Bible or help people through a spiritual formation of some kind,
yeah,
was like the most unthinkable point of pride.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, who do you think? Yeah, who are you to think you could do something like that?
Yeah.
And so I had that in the back of my mind.
Wow. Yeah. I want everybody to be doing that.
Right.
That's my way of looking at it. It's, wow. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to think about seminary, which is what I really wanted to do when I set out to go to college in the first place, I was like, I'll get the undergrad and then, but really I want to go to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, like got some great counsel again from Scott and others and many of my mentors that I still talk about what's next with to this day. I enrolled in Western Seminary in the fall of 2022 and just did commencement like a month ago now.
Congratulations.
Yeah, did all that. So I'm in my victory lap. I have 3 classes I'm taking right now for summer courses. But so just like with my undergrad, I don't know, the Lord's sense of humor with this stuff. I was about halfway through seminary when we found out we were having our 4th baby.
Okay.
So we've doubled our family size.
Yeah.
Our kids anyways.
Yeah.
And I've been able to earn 2 degrees by the grace of God and by his constant patience with me and his constant working through my infinitely patient spouse.
Yeah.
we've been able to become equipped, hopefully, for the next phase of things.
So one of the many reasons why it was worth sticking your neck out way back when it was not advised to date her. That's great.
Yeah, right.
So when you, I got to ask, when you were doing seminary, mm-hmm. When you were doing college, could you feel any baggage? Did you have any nagging thoughts or you are more able, it seems like, to just wipe things away and start new. But did you have any questions?
Yeah, sure. It was definitely, again, the presumption that you would be the person who would be able to do this.
Yeah.
There, you have the imposter syndrome, right? That comes up.
Yeah.
Every time you have a struggle or you're having a moment of doubt or you get, you know, big family news or something like that you don't feel like you're dealing with very well.
Yeah.
The enemy really pounces on those moments.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that got me out of followers, the thing that got me into college, the thing that got me into seminary, the thing that got me into all these things mm-hmm. was community.
Yeah.
It was being able to talk to other people, lean on other people, ask the hard questions, get honest feedback.
Interesting. You're all of a sudden you're outside of the echo chamber that you'd lived in your whole life, where you'd only heard one message your whole life, which is stay here. Stay here comes with so many things, like don't go to college, don't go try to learn how to teach the Bible. That's ridiculous. So many of those things that are just all you hear.
Yeah,
I just. It's great when you get out, like you said, into community and you can have other voices speak into your life. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. And then when it came down to make a decision about like what to do with this, what am I doing with seminary? I'm about to finish, and it's like what does the Lord have for us next? And I didn't feel like I was being called to anything specifically in the local church, not right now anyways. Like we weren't planning on adding 2 babies to our family when we set out on this journey. And now we have a kind of a different family makeup. So I was like, well, you know, I think I've got a pretty unique experience and pretty unique education now to speak into that unique experience. So I'm like, well, why don't I just try a podcast?
Yeah, it's easy. Anybody can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, Mark's doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so we've just released our 12th episode. Nice. It's called it's the Clear Path Christianity Podcast because I thought, what did I need 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I needed a clear path to Christianity.
Yeah.
I needed to learn how to strip all of the nonsense of what I'd been taught and how I'd been indoctrinated, and I really just needed to get down to what actually is Christianity.
Yeah.
And so basically what I do, my story informs how I do Christian apologetics from defending what C.S. Lewis called mere Christianity from the perspective of someone who was raised in a cult.
Yeah.
Just nobody else is doing that.
Yeah.
Because, this is – we have an interesting story, Mark. I'm sure you're aware.
We do. It's I've been told that, yeah.
Many times.
Well, that's great. Scott, do you have any questions or anything to – as we wrap up, I do want to ask him if he's got a hymn, because we always close with a hymn. But
I don't have anything else. I guess I was just thinking, the way that you laid your graduations alongside new babies, I don't imagine that going back to school is an option for you.
No, no.
I'm done with both. Yeah,
I have pushed my saint of a wife plenty far with education. I think we'll let the kids take the baton any further if they'd like.
That's
to.
Perfect.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we always end our episodes with a hymn. So is there one that was meaningful for you?
Yeah, I had about 10 of them.
But
I narrowed it down to Blessed Assurance. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I chose this one is because I remember not even knowing what this song was about for the 32 years that I sang it.
Yeah.
And the hundreds of times that I sang it until I did, right?
Yeah.
Until I did realize what the song was about.
Yeah.
And it is that that blessed assurance that we have that all the things that we couldn't do, Jesus could do and did.
Yeah.
And we can rest in that. And you can know that no matter what happens between now and then, that final point is fixed.
Yeah.
And so you know that everything that happens between now and then is just a footnote on a larger story that's being told in and through you. And so I think that's why I like this particular song.
That's great. And that really is why we want to do a hymn at the end of each, because I had the same experience. I would sing what I found out was the gospel in so many of these hymns and not even knowing that I was hearing the gospel. And we want people to be thinking about what they're singing when they're out there. And it says, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Heir of salvation, purchase of God, born of his spirit, washed in his blood. This is my story, this is my song, praising my Savior all the day long. Perfect submission, perfect delight, visions of rapture now burst on my sight. Angels descending, bring from above, echoes of mercy, whispers of love. Perfect submission, all is at rest. I in my Savior am happy and blessed. Watching and waiting, looking above, filled with his goodness, lost in his love.
Mm. So
that, it still is just one of the greatest gifts, I think, that you get from the Holy Spirit when you trust in Jesus, that you do understand these things. And because I was the same way, saying them for decades, not knowing what they meant. And then it just felt
hearing you both say that, I just want to say, if anybody is listening who sings those at church services like you did, why don't you just ask God to help you understand that? Because it's not rocket science. The words say, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine.
Yeah.
And that's a very different experience. It's a very different life than if he's not yours. And it, they're understandable. Mm-hmm. You know, you may appreciate them much more later, but they're very understandable. And so I want to encourage people, just take the hymnal just like you just did and read it and think about what does this really mean, and rather than just sing it in church and get it over with.
That's great. One more time, Cole, the name of your podcast can find it.
Yeah, the podcast is called Clear Path Christianity. If you Google that, something will come up. I'm pretty much everywhere. YouTube for video podcasts, Substack, Facebook, Instagram, Apple, Spotify, all over. Clear Path Christianity. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, hopefully this has been helpful. If you have questions or comments or a topic that you would like us to cover, you can reach us at comments@onerightchurch.com. And for more information, you can visit our website, www.onerightchurch.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Talked about it on here before, like you've got 1 foot on the dock, 1 foot in the boat, and the boat is leaving the dock, and you've got to make a decision.
There's only so long you can stay in that place.
Yeah.
And so I think the two reasons that I stayed, one was this, right? Like we talked about, somebody's going to come eventually. Like,
yeah.
God's not going to leave us hanging forever. Eventually we'll get somebody who can, you know, like take over the ship and guide it in the right direction.
Yeah.
So there was always that hope. And then the price of losing family, losing friends.
Yeah.
And not knowing where I would go.
Yeah.
Like, where am I going to go if I leave the only community that I've ever known? Then what?
Plus, you're trained your whole life that everything outside of the walls is trying to deceive you.
Right.
It is out there to pull you away from this place.
Right.
So you're just kind of have this ingrained doubt about that you will be able to find a safe place if you do leave.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like an invisible fence for dogs.
Right.
Where you go so far and then, you know, you're expecting this shock and so you turn around.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's good. So I had those two complications that were weighing on me, and I genuinely thought that the community could be reformed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that hope kept me there, because I felt like eventually God would see how lost we were and provide the shepherd that I thought we all agreed.
Right.
We needed.
Right.
So that was basically where I sat until other people started getting off the ark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for a long time, we were all sealed in there, right? And we were just weathering the flood, right? In the safety of the ark. I know you guys have talked about the ark of safety motif on this podcast before.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we're all in there. And every once in a while, one or two crazies would jump out.
Yeah.
Right. But it was never that many people.
Right. People would immediately discredit them.
Right.
And make sure, you know, and don't talk to them.
Right. Exactly.
And yeah.
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 Yeah. It was when like handfuls and handfuls of people were starting to go like, I'll take the floodwaters.
Yeah.
Over another minute on this arc.
Yeah.
When I started going, okay, maybe there is a way to safely get off and to weather the storms of life on another boat.
Yeah.
And so I think I needed more people in the community to pave that way for me to feel like I could also.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was from like 2017 to 2019, there was like this mass exodus, and we were kind of part of the second wave of that.
Mm-hmm. That's good. It's interesting that just as you were saying, and I've said very similar things, that you had hopes that God would see how lost we were,
right,
and send a man to save us.
Right.
I was just like, he did. Like, that is the story of the Bible.
Yeah.
God seeing how lost we were
uh-huh.
and sent someone to save us.
That's exactly right.
yeah, we just had tunnel vision about that, and we had anyway.
Well, when you think about that, just how rich is it that that is in the human heart?
Yeah.
That we are when you recognize your loss, you are looking for someone to save you. Yeah. And you might look in the wrong place, but that is exactly the human condition and exactly what God has come to do. And so I think that's quite remarkable that you both articulate really the entire storyline of the Bible in your own experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I think that once the Holy Spirit entered the picture and I saw Jesus fully for who he is and for what he did, I mean, you can understand those things on an intellectual level, but the thing that gives you enough certainty to be willing to risk everything for it is that, like we talked about, the 18 inches between your brain and your heart.
Yeah.
And that, once that moves, then it was kind of like, there really didn't really matter what was behind me.
Yeah, I've talked about it on here before, but I spent a lot of years praying that God would reveal to me what is true and then give me the strength to act on that.
Yeah.
And until he revealed to me what was true, then I stopped praying because it was too hard. Like what the cost was going to be was too hard. And my first response to it was to quit praying that because I didn't think I could do it, because you just know what will happen when you do.
I think it's worth noting from my vantage point that in some respect, your emotional responses were two very different responses. Mm. Yours, you just described yours as you quit praying and you didn't want it to be true.
Yeah.
And you said, I just was ready to forget everything behind. And that's kind of, when you said that, that's kind of my earliest memory of you and hearing your story was you just like, I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And you were ready to move on when I first met you.
Yes.
And it impacted you, Mark, differently.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that I stayed at Followers for probably about 3 years after becoming a believer. Like, I don't know exactly, but I knew better 3 years before I was able to leave, we were able to leave. And but the Lord had to answer that prayer to give us the strength to
respond.
The one I quit. I started praying it again.
Sure.
But for a while, I thought, oh man,
I'm sure he left it on his phone, and he would just listen to that old prayer over and over.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So then once we left, I think there was a bunch of changes that took place that reinforced to me, at least, because you make a decision like that to leave everything that you've ever known behind, and a lot of times you have that boldness because you have that supernatural thing going for you that's giving you that assurance and pushing you forward and helping to like guide you and make sure you know that you're going the right direction. Mm. And that's not as consistent, obviously, right, as we would hope that it would be a lot of times. And so
you mean it comes and goes?
Yeah, like there were, I still have moments, where I think even if it's just for a split second, like, man, I really hope this was worth it. Mm. And then of course, the Lord comes along and goes, yes.
Yeah.
Come on, kid. You know it. You're on the right track.
Yeah.
And I think it's the peaks that I have been brought through over the years that have helped to reinforce that, as well as getting out of the valleys.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking about, I've said on here before that I believe I can honestly say that I have never once regretted the decision to leave. There have been super hard days, like every birthday, every Father's Day, you know, things like that are hard. But the Lord pulls you through.
Yep.
And I can remember when there were hard days there, the right. answer was muster up some strength, right. toughen up,
yeah.
try harder, quit yeah. asking questions.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just so much better
yeah.
To go through those valleys
right.
With the Lord than it was without, for sure. That's probably the most obvious thing anybody's ever said on this podcast. But
well, it's an important thing.
Yeah.
Because really, you're going to... That's the choice you're making.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm going to have an easy life or a hard life. Nobody yeah. gets the easy life.
Yeah.
You're going to have to say, okay, am I going to go with the Lord or am I going to go on my own?
Yeah.
And that's really the choice.
Yeah.
Am I going to try harder or am I going to trust him?
Yeah.
And so that's the difference.
And one of the things you said about you needed people to pave the way
yeah.
a little bit. I wonder if I've talked about that enough on here, the importance of that and the people who did do the hard thing. And I was able to sit back there and watch to see how it turned out for
right.
them. It's kind of cowardly, but
sure.
I have a deep appreciation for the people who did that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very important. And I had a lot of friends who
yeah.
kind of held my hand along the way and gave me good advice. And,
oh, sure.
Because I came up with every excuse in the book to stay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And yeah. and once we were out, and like you said, I had learned to do this life thing.
Yeah.
In community.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I have these ideas, these things that I would like to do. I feel like the Lord might be leading me. Before, when I felt like the Lord was leading me, I had to be like, no, that can't be it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go that direction. But once I had been freed from that
yeah.
and brought into a community that actually did want me to walk with the Lord, I thought, well, I'm going to start thinking about what I might do next.
Yeah.
Now, what's step one in this new freedom
yeah.
path? And for me, one of the things that I always wanted to do was earn a college degree. Nobody in my family had ever done that.
Yeah.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a high school diploma in my lineage, let alone a college education. And so I thought, maybe this is something I can do, and I got great counsel from Scott and others.
Mm-hmm.
And we left in 2019, the fall of 2019, and I enrolled for my undergrad studies in the fall of 2020.
Yeah.
And that was an awesome experience. That was, I felt like, oh, this is like being a student thing. This is part of my makeup. This yeah. is definitely something that the Lord.
You were wired for that.
Yeah. The Lord yeah. wired me this way. He made me to be this way. And when I had to do all my own, you know, independent learning before. So to get something formal was really yeah. cool. And then the next big change after long times, I think our youngest was born in 2013. We had in 2021, I was about to wrap, well, no, I was about halfway through my undergrad studies. And we find out we're pregnant.
Okay.
And we're like, we have an, I think we had like a, what was it? They were like 8 and 10.
Yeah.
We're like, oh, okay. We thought that part of our life was over. We'd had some issues. So we had baby number 3. And it was like, he was born, I was writing like my capstone project, like in the hospital, waiting for him to be born. So like finishing my undergrad studies and him being born like basically happened in tandem because I didn't want to be doing that stuff. You know, I did my wow. undergrad studies online. So it was self-paced. And so mm-hmm. I could do it my own. But I didn't want to be doing that, so I really truncated my time and
you pasted so it would coincide with
right
yeah, yeah.
So I was like
the birth yeah,
and then so he was perfect. A little bit early and so I was like oh boy so
oh,
I had to like,
hurry yeah.
I had to wrap my that yeah. up so yeah another and then I think when I set out to do my undergrad studies one of the things I had in the back of my mind which was an odd thought was what about like theological training
yeah
what about ministry. These weren't things that we entertained
yeah.
growing up.
No.
That wasn't when like to to presume that you could do something like teach the Bible or help people through a spiritual formation of some kind was like the most unthinkable point of pride.
Who do you think you are?
Yeah, who do you think? Yeah, who are you to think you could do something like that?
Yeah.
And so I had that in the back of my mind.
Wow. Yeah. I want everybody to be doing that.
Right.
That's my way of looking at it. It's, wow. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to think about seminary, which is what I really wanted to do when I set out to go to college in the first place, I was like, I'll get the undergrad and then, but really I want to go to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, like got some great counsel again from Scott and others and many of my mentors that I still talk about what's next with to this day. I enrolled in Western Seminary in the fall of 2022 and just did commencement just like a month ago now.
Congratulations.
Yeah, did all that. So I'm in my victory lap. I have three classes I'm taking right now for summer courses. But so just like with my undergrad, I don't know, the Lord's sense of humor with this stuff, I was about halfway through seminary when we found out we were having our fourth baby.
Okay.
So we've doubled our family size.
Yeah.
Our kids anyways.
Yeah.
And I've been able to earn 2 degrees by the grace of God and by his constant patience with me and his constant working through my infinitely patient spouse.
Yeah.
we've been able to become equipped, hopefully, for the next phase of things.
So one of the many reasons why it was worth sticking your neck out way back when it was not advised to date her. That's great.
Yeah, right.
So when you, I got to ask, when you were doing seminary, mm-hmm. When you were doing college, could you feel any baggage? Did you have any nagging thoughts or you are more able, it seems like, to just wipe things away and start new. But did you have any questions?
Yeah, sure. It was definitely, again, the presumption that you would be the person who would be able to do this.
Yeah.
There, you have the imposter syndrome, right? That comes up.
Yeah.
Every time you have a struggle or you're having a moment of doubt or you get, you know, big family news or something like that you don't feel like you're dealing with very well.
Yeah.
The enemy really pounces on those moments.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that got me out of followers, the thing that got me into college, the thing that got me into seminary, the thing that got me into all these things mm-hmm. was community.
Yeah.
It was being able to talk to other people, lean on other people, ask the hard questions, get honest feedback.
It's interesting. You're all of a sudden, you're outside of the echo chamber that you'd lived in your whole life, where you'd only heard one message your whole life, which is stay here, stay here comes with so many things like don't go to college.
Right.
Don't go try to learn how to teach the Bible. That's ridiculous. Don't, you know, so many of those things that are just all you hear.
Yeah.
It's great when you get out, like you said, into community and you can have other voices speak into your life. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was great. And then when it came down to make a decision about like what to do with this, what am I doing with seminary? I'm about to finish and it's like what does the Lord have for us next? And I didn't feel like I was being called to anything specifically in the local church, not right now anyways. Like we weren't planning on adding 2 babies to our family when we set out on this journey. And now we have a kind of a different family makeup. So I was like, well, you know, I think I've got a pretty unique experience and pretty unique education now to speak into that unique experience. So I'm like, well, why don't I just try a podcast?
Yeah, it's easy. Anybody can do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, Mark's doing it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And so that was we've just released our 12th episode. Nice. It's called it's the Clear Path Christianity podcast because I thought, what did I need 10 years ago?
Yeah.
I needed a clear path to Christianity.
Yeah.
I needed to learn how to strip all of the nonsense of what I'd been taught and how I'd been indoctrinated, and I really just needed to get down to what actually is Christianity.
Yeah.
And so basically what I do, my story informs how I do Christian apologetics defending what C.S. Lewis called mere Christianity from the perspective of someone who was raised in a cult.
Yeah.
Just nobody else is doing that.
Yeah.
We have an interesting story, Mark. I'm sure you're aware.
We do. It's I've been told that. Yeah.
Many times.
Well, that's great. Scott, do you have any questions or anything as we wrap up? I do want to ask him if he's got a hymn, because we always close with a hymn. But
I don't have anything else. I guess I was just thinking, you know, the way that you laid your graduations alongside new babies, I don't imagine that going back to school is an option for you.
No, no.
I'm done with both. Yeah,
I have pushed my saint of a wife plenty far with education. I think we'll let the kids take the baton any further if they'd like.
That's
to.
Perfect.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, we always end our episodes with a hymn. So is there one that was meaningful for you?
Yeah, I had about 10 of them.
But
I narrowed it down to Blessed Assurance. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I chose this one is because I remember not even knowing what this song was about for the 32 years that I sang it.
Yeah.
And the hundreds of times that I sang it until I did, right?
Yeah.
Until I did realize what the song was about.
Yeah.
And it is that that blessed assurance that we have that all the things that we couldn't do, Jesus could do and did.
Yeah.
And we can rest in that. And you can know that no matter what happens between now and then, that final point is fixed.
Yeah.
And so you know that everything that happens between now and then is just a footnote on a larger story that's being told in and through you. And so I think that's why I like this particular song.
That's great. And that really is why we want to do a hymn at the end of each, because I had the same experience. I would sing what I found out was the gospel in so many of these hymns and not even knowing that I was hearing the gospel. And we want people to be thinking about what they're singing when they're out there. And it says, "Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Heir of salvation, purchase of God, born of his spirit, washed in his blood. This is my story, this is my song, praising my Savior all the day long. Perfect submission, perfect delight, visions of rapture now burst on my sight. Angels descending, bring from above echoes of mercy, whispers of love. Perfect submission, all is at rest. I in my Savior am happy and blessed. Watching and waiting, looking above, filled with his goodness, lost in his love."
Mm.
So that, it still is just one of the greatest gifts, I think, that you get from the Holy Spirit when you trust in Jesus, that you do understand these things. And because I was the same way, saying them for decades, not knowing what they meant. And then it just felt
hearing you both say that, I just want to say, if anybody is listening who sings those at church services like you did, why don't you just ask God to help you understand that? Because it's not rocket science. The the words say, "Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine."
Yeah.
And that's a very different experience. It's a very different life than if he's not yours. And it, they're understandable. Mm-hmm. You know, you may appreciate them much more later, but they're very understandable. And so I want to encourage people, just take the hymnal just like you just did and read it and think about what does this really mean, and rather than just sing it in church and get it over with.
That's great. One more time, Cole, the name of your podcast so people can find it.
Yeah, the podcast is called Clear Path Christianity. If you Google that, something will come up. Okay. I'm pretty much everywhere. YouTube for video podcasts, Substack, Facebook, Instagram, Apple, Spotify, all over. Clear Path Christianity. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks for being here.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.